Blog Talk Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Santee, South Carolina, and the Triple Wing Hammer Report. I'm so glad that all of you are able to join us tonight. Man, I am geeked tonight for tonight's show. I've been excited for the last couple of weeks knowing that our guest was going to be on. And like I said before in a video that I did earlier, he is a mentor of mine. I've learned so much about this. I just admire the man. He is just wow. That's all. He has the wow factor, as far as I'm concerned. Let me first apologize for last week's show. I had a mishap with the computer and the software that goes along with this stuff, and every day I do them at the same time. And the way this thing works, you only get one shot, you know, to do a show, and they don't allow you to come back in. But we're going to fix that next week because we're going to be doing some other things in conjunction with this via Facebook. And do the show live. I'm going to experiment with some things later on this week to make sure that we can pull this off. But that's what technology does. I want to try to put a face to everything so people can see who we're talking to. The radio is good, but sometimes the way our culture is going right now, video is where it's at. So we're going to try to see if we can integrate the two and see if we can make that work. We'll be doing that for next week's show if we can. But again, I apologize for last week, and I meant to send a post out apologizing, but got caught up in school and some other things, other wacky things going on in school and everything. And I mean, it was just a wild week. So let's see if we can move on. Without further ado, because I think that we're going to have us a blast time tonight, I want to bring Harold on so that we can get going here, because the guy is just a genius, a wizard at this stuff. You know, he's if I had another state championship ring to give, and they allowed me to do it, I would sure make one for him, because he was just as responsible as those kids as far as getting those things done. So let's see if we can bring Harold on. Let's make sure I hit the right button here. My man, are you there?
Leonard, how are
yes,
you,
sir?
Man?
The great Harold Strauss. I wish I had one of those sound effects. I could give you a standing ovation and everything. But, man, I'm so glad and pumped that you are here.
How's everything going over there, brother?
How's everything
going
on?
We're getting some rain out here, so it's been good, brother.
Okay, good, man. Good. Yeah, well, y'all got y'all on that you thought there as far as with the flooding and all that other stuff going on. Yeah, I'm sure y'all get that done. Let me get started here, Harold. For those three people in this country that don't know who you are, could you tell those three people who you are?
Who I am? Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'm a guy who's got lucky enough to get into this coaching profession 38 years ago now, and be an educator and a coach, and been the luckiest thing in my whole life. Haven't had to work a day other than show up and spend all night and all day, 7 days a week. But it's been an absolute bizarre trip that I wouldn't trade for $1 million. And meeting people like you and all the coaches, the network, and mostly working with them kids, man. Them kids keep you young and are a pleasure. So those are all my best friends today. You're my coaches and my coaches I know and my ex-players. So it's a great world.
Well, you got a bunch of those, I can tell you that. You got kids, you know, very successful kids, to tell you the truth, who are not only doing it, who did it on the field, but you put a bunch of them through school, and you know, several of them have gone on to the next level. But we're gonna get there. But I don't want to get there yet. Let me be remiss in not mentioning that Harold is another one of those guys who married way over his head. You want to talk about your wife there for a second?
Amen to that, brother. Amy is doing absolutely fantastic. We celebrated our 40th anniversary last August, and we are, if I can get my body to cooperate, we're going to try and go on an Alaska fishing trip together this summer to celebrate that. But she's as pretty as ever and working hard as ever. We're both hoping we can really, truly kind of semi-retire one of these days. So.
Well, retired to do what? I think you enjoy doing what you're doing anyway.
She tells me I'm going to end up dying on the 50-yard line between her and the doctor. They agree to that one, so they're probably right.
Yeah, well, what's a better way to go? You know, I look at the picture of your family, and, I always, when I look at that picture, I always say, now, this guy has a family that looks just like the United Nations. You want to explain?
Yeah. We're pretty diverse, brother. It's an awesome feeling, you know. Isn't it neat when you don't plan something and the good Lord just puts it all together for you? And I'm blessed. I got three daughters. They're all teachers. In fact, one's now the one you knew and came to the symposium with me, Tiffany. She's my athletic director at our new school. That's kind of why I started coaching again after I had my surgeries. But they're all teaching. And one does special ed with severely disabled and autistic kids, my youngest. And then my son is an airborne Army Ranger in special ops now, since I talked to you, I think. Based up north and getting it done that way. So I've been really proud, but they've given me eight grandkids. And if you look at our picture, we look like we married every nationality you can think of. So the kids done well. The kids did well. They give me a great, great mix, and I love them all to death.
I know you do. It shows in the picture. You know, you can look at pictures and just tell that there's a lot of love coming through that. And you know, you're a lucky man. I can say this right now. You're a lucky man. But they are also lucky to have a guy like you who's centered like you are. You know, to give them and to teach them those values that they need going forward. You also had the pleasure to, you know, you mentioned it a second ago, but you also had the pleasure to work with your daughter in a super. I laugh every time I do, but your daughter was your boss at one time, right?
Yeah. Actually, she still is. So she's still getting it done. She was the first lady athletic director in our district, and we're the second oldest in San Bernardino County. It's 129 years. And she took a lot of flack from the old guys club on that one when she got it, but she's got them all in line now and keeps me in line coaching and busy, and we're having fun. It's no, you know, I can't tell you how much fun it is to be working with your daughter and have a chance to do that, you know, and say that not a lot of people have a chance. For a while, she worked for me under on the sidelines since she was little, and all the way up through starting to be a teacher and then becoming an athletic director. So we just flip-flopped, and now she's my – but, you know, I still wear the hat, though. I come in and tell her once in a while, and then she socks me down.
let me know if I'm wrong, but and I think we talked about the last time you were on the show a couple of years ago. Did you work with Don Markham, or you played against Don Markham? How did that go? I know you played against him, but did you ever work with Don Markham? And I'll explain who Don. Well, you can go and explain who Don Markham is.
Yeah. Get, you know, I get asked that question everywhere. That's probably one of the most common questions because we are such good friends. And we're lucky enough to live in the same neighborhood. So, you know, Don and I have been friends. And actually, here's the scoop. When I started coaching, I was just a puppy coach just starting. I think I was 20 years old and an AD at a private school, boy. And I was just starting. We were getting ready to start up our program. We started the school athletic program. Anyway, Don Markham was in my backyard at Colton High School, and they were doing really well. So I, like you mentioned earlier, you start looking at who's doing things right, and he kind of adopted me. I went into his practices every single day and picked his mind, and I'd get in the huddle with him, and he would stop right what he was doing, and he would fill me in, and I liked that because that's kind of what I was planning to run anyway, and he hadn't come up with the double wing yet. He was running a stack eye and running at people and still giving the same kind of stuff, and followed his career. We've always been great friends. Gosh, I've driven his kids up to camp in the summer, and he's been at our games. I can't tell you, it's just been, we've coached. I think if you watch the video, that both of the videos that I put on YouTube, you'll see we're coaching against each other. When you see those two double wing teams going at it, that's Bloomington and that's Colton, when I was at Colton, and getting after each other. So we've coached against each other, and we've helped each other. We've bounced things off of each other. And I got to tell you, he's like a brother to me today. And I take my hat off to him as a mentor, you know, X's and O's wise, especially. He gave me lots of good ideas and info. Obviously, he had a great career, 300 wins, and he's retired now, but he's still doing great.
Well, enough for some of those young guys who don't know who Don Markham is. He is like the godfather of the double wing.
Yeah,
you know, and he's the one who first started running this weird thing, and as far as I know, you know, there are a couple others who were doing it.
Yeah,
too, but,
Leonard, I'll tell you how it happened. 1984, he went from, you got to be out here in Southern California to know the schools, but a very prominent Catholic school, Bishop Amat, and he was kind of toying with it. He was still running stack guy, but parents that had to throw, you know, they had to throw that ball to be boosters made him throw the ball. So he was finding ways to trick them and run it and throw it at the same time. Anyway, he 1 year there, then he went to Ramona High School and he implemented the double wing. So I actually got to see, I was in practices when he put that thing into works for the first time and first time ever. And he ran it there and we did the same thing at the school I was at. So we both put the double wing in and brought it out for the first time in high school football in California together on different schools in different week, you know, in the same week. So that's pretty crazy when you think about it. It's kind of neat. That goes back 30-some years.
Yeah, and, you know, for some of them young bloods who thought that they woke up and, you know, and landed on third base and thought they invented this stuff, this thing goes back a long time.
Yeah, for all those young coaches, the book on the toss, that came much later, and they mentioned Don in there, and then also several other coaches, you know, that kind of cashed in on the product. Don kind of wasn't he's kind of like me. He's not the techno guru, you know, so a lot of guys marketed off of him. But you know what? That's what it's about. You do what you do, and just love what you're doing. And that guy loves football more than anybody I think I've ever run into. And will talk with it anytime and give you anything off his back. So it's pretty neat.
Now, you have coached just about every sport there is to coach, and probably is there anything you have not coached in high school?
I haven't coached lacrosse, thank goodness, and golf. And golf drives me crazy. I would just end up throwing my clubs away because that's why I go fishing instead. So, but I've only did 1 year of basketball, and I only did I did a couple years of track, maybe 5 years of track. But everything else was mostly wrestling. Did a lot of wrestling. I officiated 16, 18 years of wrestling, and still would do it if I could. My body would let me. And a lot of softball, a lot of baseball, but. Yeah, I just love sports, love kids, man. And the opportunity came. I was lucky enough to coach two of my daughters in softball who were very, very good softball players. And some other kids. I love baseball. And if I knew, I love watching just about everything. But I ended up doing it because I loved it and the opportunity was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was crazy back then. You know, you couldn't do that now. You'd drive you to the grave, you know.
I couldn't do it. I mean, back in the day, I could do it too, but there's no way I could do it now.
No. Too demanding now. Too demanding. Way more demanding now.
Yeah. You, when I look at teams, double wing teams and everything, or any type of wing team, the first thing I look at is the offensive line. I can tell how good a team is going to be by looking at the offensive line and just seeing what kind of rhythm. Are they working together and everything? And I thought you had one of the best offensive line coach that I've ever known, and that's Richard Bray. Am I saying that right? How's Richard doing?
Yeah, you are. You know, I was really blessed over my whole career, actually, and I started out as a lineman, so I ended up at first having to coach my own line, and then I was blessed with John Nirenberg, and this guy you don't know was my mentor all through. She was junior high and high school, kept me in line, And then up in the Northwest, I had a guy by the name of Terry Hazleton who, I did his memorial for him. And then I had Rick Bray come along. And I think Rick Bray, I was blessed that those guys were geniuses, all of them. But I think Rick was the sharpest. And boy, he could get kids to do as sharp as you can imagine. And you could bump ideas off of them. Rick and I would bounce ideas that we might want to try, or we'd hear something. We'd talk to someone like you at a clinic, and we could implement it. And boy, he'd make it his own. And all of a sudden, here we are, go again. But I think overall, I was blessed my whole career with great line coaches. But Rick was probably, without a doubt, I think the strongest and the best. And boy, his lines were crisp for us. You can watch it on film. I asked him to do a lot of things, crazy things, and he'd get them done, and the kids would have fun doing it.
I think the biggest thing, that one of the biggest things we got from you, because we at Scotch Branch, I wanted to come up with an identity, doing something different, is that when I saw you doing the cowboy shift, and I said, and we started doing that thing, and those kids loved it, and we started shifting and all that good stuff, and everybody thought I came up with it, and I said, no, I just looked at the video and talked to the guys who did it, and we made it. We kind of put our little thing to it a little bit, but boy, that was probably one of the biggest things that gave us our identity, and actually, Rick did a video on that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. In fact, I probably got it tucked away where he actually teaches it, because that was a trademark for us, drove teams crazy. We just, and referees, drove referees crazy. But our kids, just like you said, it's kind of becomes their own, and you make it your own. Kids love it. They just absolutely get ownership, and it's something they talk about to this day, how we used to pull teams offside, and 10 times a game sometimes, it was crazy. But it was a lot of fun. They had so many different shifts, it was like crazy.
When he did that presentation, I just sat there with my mouth open looking at him. You've got to be kidding!
They had names for everything, Leonard. Every little thing they did, they had names for. It was hilarious. I loved it.
But you know, it was fun for I call those guys my hogs, and it was fun for them because it break them monotony. Because how many, you know, all we did was block down and pull around, you know, and we had to break the monotony somehow. And so we just that just did it for them. They just had a lot of fun doing it and everything.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you and your career. You've done some great things on and off the field. Obviously, you won a bunch of games and everything, but what sticks out in your career more than anything else?
Oh, man. Leonard, you know what? I've been blessed, brother. That's all I can tell you. I've been so blessed. Probably some of the neatest, gosh, I guess probably the neatest thing in my career is watching kids achieve what we call professional. You know, we like that commercial that came out, the NCAA, where it says 98% of us are going to turn professional at something other than football.
Mm-hmm.
But to see kids achieve what they set out to do, and, man, we have had some great success with kids in their lives. You know, not only to have the NFL players, that was a great moment, but man, to see kids that I can't count the number of policemen. And because we did so much with the police and the fire departments when we were at Colton and we were up north and Colton up there, it influenced so many kids to go into fire and police. And I can tell you, we probably have 30 to 40 police and firemen today that are still active.
Mm-hmm.
All the way back to, gosh, 30-something years ago. I have one was my quarterback for 4 years, he's one of the only players I coached to play in 4 championship games in a row in high school, and quarterback. And he had a picture of him. He's a captain now in the fire department in Chicago, just outside the suburb of Chicago. And his son is also now a fireman and almost up to be, I forget what level, but, and they had a picture of them fighting a fire together. And I probably about, teared up when I saw that, as he was, you know, showing that out proud. But so that is the community service, the moments we've had times to go and
could you hold that call? Just we got somebody from the 215 area code who called in. Let me see who that is.
Okay.
Hey, this is the Hammer Report. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Yeah, this is Coach Gordon from Philadelphia, from the Overberg Monarchs.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
How's it going, Coach? All right.
Fine,
I just wanted
man.
To call in and listen in, man, and see what you guys were talking about today. You know, I just saw the Facebook Live post. I just wanted to call in and see what you guys were talking about today.
Well, we got one of the greatest double guys in the world here. You had a question for him?
I just wanted to know about the counter game. When you put the double wing with the single wing together, does that help with the counter game? Because kind of out of the base single wing, we have a little bit of trouble running counters out of the base single wing. So I was wondering if you put that double wing with it, you can run those counters a lot better. And how does the counter game work out of that?
You know what? That's a great question, because I get asked that a lot, especially when I'm speaking. And I think, brother, when we put the single wing in, and we call rocker series especially, and we put our spinner series in and ran the counters off of it, it opened it up so much more. And the reason I really searched out the single wing is, you know how you kind of get clogged down, and sometimes you have a hard time scoring if you get behind?
Right.
You know, people kind of put that on you, but you know what?
Yep.
You can score fast. They don't realize, but it did. It opened our game so much. Just the misdirection, I think it made our counter game so much better. I think we were
right.
Our misdirection counter game and sweep game became so much more effective, even in the double wing, because they were having to worry about when we were shifting, where the ball was going. If you watch some of our tape, there's a lot of times where they had to almost play us man-to-man because they couldn't tell where the ball was.
Where the ball was going, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna definitely watch some tape, Coach. You got some tape up on the Facebook Live thing?
I got some links up there. Yeah, those are the links to Harold's team, and they are up on that Facebook. Now, are you coaching high school?
I'm coaching in pound ball. I have about 11 and 12-year-olds, youth football right now.
Nice.
So we, yeah,
nice.
Pound ball.
What group are you
yeah,
with?
So we've been having – I'm sorry?
Which one of those groups are you with?
The Overbrook Monarchs. We're out of Philly, out of West Philadelphia. Yeah, we've been coming to the Conclave for about 6 years now. We've been coming up to the Conclave in Wilkes-Barre. So we'll be there this year. And,
nice.
You know, I saw this. Yeah, we'll be there again this year. We love it. It's a lot of good information up there.
Yeah. Great time.
Yeah,
so. Is this the same group that had the guy who died a couple of weeks ago?
No, that's the North Philly Aztecs. That's Coach Wiz. Oh. And, yeah, he passed away suddenly. Very close to that organization. So we did attend the funeral. It was very sad, but they've been coming up as long as we have to Wilkes-Barre. So we did have one of the coaches pass away just recently.
Wow.
Y'all in my prayers, man, because that was I met him. Well, I've known him for the last couple of years, and it shocked me when it happened and everything. But come on, coming down and learning, man. And those links are right up there where you see Coach. The last picture I put up there this morning on Coach Ralph, their links are right there.
Coach, I also tagged them all. California Wing or Coach Harold Strauss. Yeah. You can go to YouTube and put that in. It'll probably bring them all up together. So
California Wing.
California Wing or Coach Harold Strauss, single wing football. They're almost all tagged. I put a lot of tags to try and get them up there for you guys.
I'm definitely going to check out some tape, man. We're definitely looking forward to getting some good counter game, man. We kind of moved leagues to a different league this year, a little heavier pound league, and we have a chance to go national to out in Florida with this league. So we're just looking to put in some little wrinkles and open up the series a little bit.
I love it. And, you know, Coach, anytime most of those guys up, I haven't been up for a few years up to Philadelphia. I want to get back up there just because of health. But Todd Ross, absolute great job. I know Leonard goes up there all the time, but almost all those guys have my phone number. Leonard has my phone number, and you're welcome to call anytime if I can help you.
Oh,
or my
appreciate it.
Or anything, my email, any of those. Most people have it. Just give me a buzz, and if I can help you with anything at all, man, you got it.
I really appreciate it, Coach. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Take care. All right.
All right, Harold, back to you now. Now, you were talking about community. Harold?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, you were talking about that. I think the last thing you were talking about, how great your community was and everything.
Community service team. Being able to work with all the people in the community, and especially the police and fire departments, we tied into our community service projects and got them involved in our program. And, man, it made a huge influence, not only on my son, you know, who's in the Army and military and doing what he's doing, but also kids that are serving our country and on the streets every day. So.
You also, and I can't think of this guy's name, and the guy that you had as your academic—I call him an academic coach.
Oh, Steve Barton.
You put an academic program there that just blew me away, and I use it till today. You want to explain what that is?
Yeah, that's Steve Barton. I call him Coach Barton, and he always is so humble. He says, "I'm not a coach." I said, "Yes, you are, brother." But I ran a few ideas by him one day. Man, this guy was—I knew was the greatest. He was just a spot. Spot on. You met him, so you know what I'm talking about. He says he's a football geek, but I tell you what, he's the smartest, one of the smartest guys ever. And basically, what we did was we wanted to have our players check their grades every week, and anybody below a C or below had to go to tutoring. And we got teachers involved in that. We started giving some T-shirts and plaques away, and pretty soon we had 17, 18 teachers involved in this thing. But I tell you, it literally changed our program. We went from when I showed up at Colton, they had 10% of their kids going to college. The very next year, we had 85%, I believe, went to college. And the following 4 or 5 years, we had 100% either went into the military or went into college. And it was directly related to grades and this academic program. And it basically just kept them in check. They couldn't go to practice. They couldn't go to the weight room. They had to go to tutoring if they had a C or below in any subject. And we checked them. If they didn't turn it in, they couldn't suit up. So the kids believed in it. And I tell you, we have kids today. All the kids in the NFL tell you they wouldn't have made it to college if it wasn't for that. And so it was a great brainchild of a lot of us, but we put it together. And Steve, I still say he was the master of that whole thing. But we presented it all over the country because it was such an important piece of our success over the years.
The X's and O's were easy, but getting those kids to do what needed to be done in the classroom, that's always the challenge I've always found out. And if you can master the academics, the rest of the stuff is so much easier. You know, it just makes your life much easier, you know. A lot of people don't know your demographics. No, we were over here on the East Coast and everything. You want to describe your demographics?
The easiest way to describe it is we're in the concrete jungle and the fish don't jump out of the concrete, brother. but we are in the Inland Empire in Southern California. We're about 55 miles east of L.A. If you were to draw a straight line, which is the I-10 freeway from L.A. to Palm Springs, we are a midpoint stopping point where they used to stop off at Wyatt Earp used to be the and his brother used to be the sheriff here, San Bernardino, in the old days. And anyway, so those are kind of where our claim to fame is. We're 45 minutes from everywhere, the mountains, the ocean, Disneyland, just about anything you want to say, we're 45 minutes from. So the top of Big Bear. But we're in the concrete jungle now. It's pretty much all the trees I grew up in, orange groves I grew up around, are not here anymore. And but we get it done.
And your student body is made up of the demographics of your student body and everything.
Yeah. At Colton, we were the demographics were probably 75% Hispanic, maybe 15% Caucasian. And then a pretty wild mix of everything else. It's pretty much the same. Our whole district and our whole area is kind of that way now. It's even more, probably a little more evened out. I think, probably about 65% Hispanic, 65 to 70, maybe 15% African-American and the same Caucasian. And then, Asian, Samoan. We're getting a lot more Samoan kids, Tongan and Samoan kids, which are, great kids coming over from American Samoa over here in Sutherland, which is kind of cool. So mm-hmm. I love to see us get diverse,
Well, the more diverse you are, the better you are, because those cultures
absolutely
and people getting to know each other. So, it's just a good thing.
I was going to say these days you need a great mix. They need to learn how to, everybody needs to learn how to live with each other,
I
think that's what the game of football.
Yeah, how did you make it work?
That's the game of football. What's that?
How did you make it work? I mean, because here you are, a little short white guy coming in, talking to
the
Hispanics. How did you make all this work?
It helps when you got a little rubble rouser running around. That's your son, and he's mixed. We adopted him on his. 2 days old, and he was 2 days old, and boy, what a blessing to our family. And the other kids from the other things, they look at this little white guy, and then they look over here and say, "Hey, man!" And I used to tease him. I say, "Well, his mama's black, and she wasn't." It was funny. They would just we would make jokes, but they just saw that I was wide open. And we talk. I tell you, Leonard, what we did all the time. We talked about it. The game of football, it doesn't matter if it's football, wrestling, whatever, but the game of football is as contact as it is, and the things you learn out of it, you need to, right away, if they learn how to put all that aside, because they're all got to put it aside and come together as one, if they're going to win together or they're going to compete together. And I think talking about it and then seeing it, you live it out, how you treat people, and no matter who they are. And I think that was a huge factor, is our coaches, didn't matter where you came from. I think all our kids knew they had a fair treatment, a fair look, and we're going to get a fair shot. And I think embracing it and talking about it really helps.
Mm-hmm. You did not as we talked before, you did not start out in the double wing. Did I remember right that you were when you first started doing anything, you were a wing tee guy?
Yeah, you know what, Lynn, as probably when I was in high school, my coach ran a single wing a little bit. So I strayed away from that. I was a center, so we didn't, you know, back then we didn't care what happened. Just get the ball back and let the backs do their thing. And then I got to kick the ball for my glory, you know, for field goals. But we had wing tee probably and some stack eye because I saw what Markham did, you know. We like to pound the ball. It was pretty much just straight out. I never was much of an option guy. We did option, you know, and I added that to our we ran a lot of that. If you saw us, you saw a tape where we ran a lot of option and misdirection and everything with our double wing. We just made it wider, much more diverse of what we ran because I was a believer that we had to do some more things besides the six basic plays. So, and, you know, that's kind of where I stray a little bit from some of the guys that are going to run 100, you know, run the thing over and over in their sleep. We still ran them over and over our sleep. We just stayed till it got dark.
Mm-hmm. Because I see, when I look at your tape, I still see the flavor of the wing tee there, you know. I still see.
I was going to say, still has a wing tee flair in some of the stuff we do. But, you know, when you think about the double wing, that's where Don got his ideas was from the wing tee. You know, the pass, the boot pass is what is waggle. And then his little trap, you know, they run that fullback trap. He just runs it to the backside a lot more. It's, you know what, it's like I was talking to one of my young coaches the other day. He was looking for a clinic, and I just told him, just remember when you go, nobody reinvents the wheel. So we just kind of keep tweaking that wheel. And so whenever I go to places and talk to people, talk to coaches and watch film, I just try and see how can I tweak it into my offense to make it really bother somebody and how they can watch us and cover us. So that's kind of how I evolved in the different offenses together. They just all seemed to, those three offenses seemed to just be made for each other.
They sure do. If everybody just take a just chill for a second and just study the offense, you'll see that you can put all those things together and become one hell of a football team, you know, and never have to really change anything from year to year, you know. If you're a double wing team, you got a bunch of cloggers and everything. Oh, here we come, babies. If you got a bunch of speed guys like you had, you know, there's some things that you can do is getting them on edge and everything, but never really changing your core belief into what you were doing. Was it a big sale?
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
You and I talked about that several years and several times, and that's exactly right. I think the biggest selling point was it didn't matter your talent. You just ran really a different set. I just knew that if I could run, I forget how many formations we had. I think in one of my presentations that you find online, it was something like 27 formations, but I knew we could run every single play that we had out of those formations, out of all those formations. And that kind of multiplied. And so people just, I would have defensive coordinators tell me they hated my guts, you know, and they would just throw in the kitchen sink that week when we were playing us because it would drive them crazy. But it wasn't that, it really is much simpler than that if you know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that complicated, you know, it's just that you're putting a little different dress on the girl and just saying, all right, we're going to a party now. But you're going with a different.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
How did you come up with all of this? I mean, you are so diverse in what you do.
You know what?
I
tell you what, Leonard, I'm a lot like you. I've watched you, brother. You study a lot and you pick, man. I did that so much. I go to clinics all over the United States. You know, how I found single wing was watching the ESPN special with Travis Connor turning that program away there, you know. And so I found out, I made calls and found out who these guys were, and I flew back. And I spent many a day and many an hour, many a week. I think, you know, going to these, you mentioned the best clinics we ever have are the single wing clinics because they give you everything you want. And but also going and sitting down with people. I know Rick Darlington's been a big of late. I think he's one of the guys that are really doing some things to change the game a little bit. And and improve some on the single wing stuff. So I love watching his stuff. But, you know, I remember calling him, and he offered just to come stay at his house. And if I want to come watch a week of spring football. And that's kind of the way guys are. And I think if you can do that, you learn so much. I know I've went into guys' practices for a week and helped teach their kids our offense. You know, I just did that all my life. You know, I studied so much film, and I get teased about that all the time. My young coaches, there were days, man, I think they were all sleeping and I was still going. Either that or I got them so excited they were all going and I was sleeping. So, but we both watched so much film, and just to get the little things that might be good for our program. It wasn't about changing everything. It was about what can we take and put into our program to make it better. And it just kept getting more diverse. And then you start seeing things out on the field and go, oh man, what have you done? You know, we had some plays that we got running by accident that we made a mistake. And I went, oh no, don't change that. Let's do that. And we would change and that'd be a new play. So crazy, but it just comes together.
You have had a lot of great players come through your program. What was number two name?
Oh, Sharice Wright. Yeah, Sharice is with the Ravens. He's with the Baltimore Ravens right now. Yeah.
He's playing for the who now?
Yeah, we're with the Baltimore Ravens. I've got two. Him and Jimmy Smith, they're both was a receiver back then, a receiver and defensive back. They're both defensive backs on the Baltimore Ravens right now.
Are you telling me that this running this type of offense does not limit the kids' ability to go to somebody's school? That's what you're telling me?
I'm telling you that's the biggest farce that anybody's ever said to us. And we've proved them all wrong, so nobody tells me that anymore. But we have 9 NFL players, and I know we sent at least 60 to Division I, and more than that if you count Division II and III and NAIA schools. I keep telling parents, you know, who ask that question. I said, you know what, if they're good enough, they're going to find them, but you better find a classroom before you do anything if you're going to make it to that level. And that's the true deal. That's what really changed our thing. The athletes were always at Colton and always at schools I were at. It was whether we could get the kids to believe in their grades and be ready to go when it was time.
That academic is so important. I wish people would spend a lot more time, you know, dealing with that. I've had some issues where I'm at right now, but I just got through my first year here, and boy, we had to straighten up a whole bunch of stuff when it came to academics, you know. And you know, using that same philosophy, you know, that you use, you know, I call it take the candy away. You know, if you're not cutting in the classroom, you can't hang with me. You know, and hang with
right.
me is kind of, you know, it's just that simple. And so, we got our ninth grade at grades up because, you know, there's some things that we do if you don't do it right in the classroom, you know, and they understand that. But I think you have to be that tough, man. Just to listen to you, and then you have been very successful. And a couple of 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had Corey on, whereas you know, they don't play unless the grades are right.
Yeah.
And yet you're successful. You know, and I don't think you can be afraid not to put that demands on them, because if they want to do it, they'll make the adjustment. Don't you think so?
You know, yeah, you know, Leonard, I think that's the whole key today. And I'm honest to goodness, my bucket list is to get my doctorate, because, you know, if I can't coach, I love education. And, you know, I think I've taken the 27 courses off the NFHS site while I was sitting on disability, and all the ones for athletic administration on the NIAAA site. But you know what? I had a recruiter. If coaches will hear this. When I got to Colton in 2000, and I'd already been coaching, 18 years, 19 years, 20 years, and I got to Colton in 2000. And when we started, they didn't win, and they hadn't. It was just a nightmare, and they had one kid go to college out of their program the year before I got there. They told me we were going to lose probably all 10 games. Don't worry about it. That's a whole other story for another day. But the bottom line was the recruiters started coming by because I knew them, and they started stopping back by, and they actually told me, Harold, we stopped coming to Colton because none of the kids were ever eligible for the NCAA, so it was a waste of our time to come by here. And I shared that with kids, administrators and teachers. And they don't realize that. And you got to hear that, parents out there, kids out there, coaches out there. And unless you're willing to put the foot down and show the kids you mean it, you know, my doctoral thesis is going to be, at what point do you give up your morals to try and win football games? And the problem is, a lot of coaches give it up and they can't pull the trigger and set that kid out because they want to win so bad. And really, the winning will take place when they have the guts to sit that kid down so everybody else sees he means it. And that's what I truly believe.
Well, you know, you and Corey and a couple of other guys I've talked to, you know, that's what they're doing and it's working. You know, the program is successful, the kids are graduating, and you really can't tell how great that's going to be until years down the line, you know, when these kids become men and everybody's not going to be an NFL football player. You know, most of the guys, a lot of guys are not going to go to school, but if they learn those basic principles and everything on how to and I hate to use the word survive, but how to do something different with their lives, that's where what we're doing now is going to come out, and that's where you see the results of what we're teaching. But you cannot be afraid to take the candy away. You know, they have to look at some sort of standard. You know, and
but you know, it's interesting
talking to somebody who believes the same thing.
Well, interesting point, Leonard, is even our. We have 9 in the NFL, and all of those players got their degrees. When they left us, we made them promise us that they would finish their degrees because, you know, so many kids leave the NFL early. And even a couple of them left. I mean, when they left, they had 2 classes, but they're done, and every one of them has their degree. And I can't be prouder. That's one of my proudest things I say to papers and when I talk to their hometown newspapers all the time on the phone. So it means a lot to me to see kids finish, academically finish, and get an opportunity to better themselves and their family. I was the first one to graduate from college in my family, and now all my kids have gone, you know, and done it. So I believe that there is a rhyme and reason to what happens and why you do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should not limit what a kid can do. Just like we tell them on the field. You know, we should demand the same level of intensity with academics as we do with the football. And you'll find those kids will rise to the occasion. You know, shame on us if we limit these kids as to what they can do and everything, because they're going to ask that question with their eyes when they see you 15, 20 years from now. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you push me more when it came to this academic stuff? You know.
Well, you know what, Leonard, when you say that, interesting thought just came to my mind. I don't know if you guys all, because you're way over on the East Coast, but if you had your eyes on the country when we had the San Bernardino terrorist incident out here. Well, that shooting, that police chief that was all over the news was one of my ex-football players and ex-wrestlers and ex-baseball players. So, and he was just a little 150-pound kid that played way over his head and studied way over his head and was an overachiever and listened to what we said and went from the bottom of the San Bernardino Police Department to be the chief and handle the biggest incident they've ever had in the history of San Bernardino Police. So you don't limit a kid ever, because, boy, you don't know where that kid's going to go. And when they go to the top, it's pretty darn proud, you know, that you even had a part in their life. And it's pretty exciting to sit down and talk about it with them, you know, 30 years later.
It is. I mean, and you just don't know. That's why you got to push everybody. I tell our staff all the time, coach everybody. You never know. You just don't know.
Amen. Yeah. We all have stories of those kids, man, that come back around that you never would have known they were listening.
That's right.
Yeah.
We've been around a couple of days, so we can talk about these things. But you know, with all the headaches and everything, how did you deal with discipline issues? I know, well, you know, maybe I'm talking up the tree right here, but I know because of all these programs you had implemented, you didn't have these discipline issues and everything.
It comes back to the academic thing, and you got to handle number one. I think your coaches have to believe in what you believe in. And I was lucky enough that, like I said, we meshed at Colton. We decided that was probably, I always had good coaching staffs, but I think we just had the sweetest mesh over a 12-year span at Colton. That they all, I mean, it's almost like we were thinking, scary sometimes, thinking the same. But also, I tell you, one time we had a kid, and I can tell you who he was, playing in the NFL right now, but he was on his at home on his couch with his girlfriend instead of being at practice. And we were at practice, and the police chief came by, and he said, "Hey, where's so-and-so?" And I said, "Well, he's not here at practice, so I bet he's probably at home." And he goes, "Okay." So the police chief ran over, knocked on the door, and scared the bejeebies out of him. He's laughing his head off when he told us the story, but he told him, "You got about 5 minutes to be at practice. Coach is waiting for you." So we had help from every direction, but we put our foot down. You know what? If you didn't kind of practice, it didn't matter how good you are. You're not going to start the ball game. And you know what? We looked at every situation and tried to be as just right across the board as we could for every kid. Didn't matter who you are, if you're the star or if you were, and the kids knew it. And so it wasn't that we didn't have problems, because we dealt with the problems, but the kids sat, you know, and the team paid a price for it. And so we got through it, and obviously we won a lot of ball games, and you know, blessed as we were, it worked. So
did you have a lot of guys who were living in single parent homes?
Yeah, probably, you know, we all know that it's almost 70% now. It's kind of crazy. It went up from 50% to 70% single parent homes. And, you know, I don't know how many times you and I both know we've talked to mothers that have asked us to try and be a figure and help them out. But you know what? It's more than that. There's, you know, when you find out six of your kids are living homeless, you know, that's another thing. That's a whole other thing. And I think we're seeing more of that now. And but they need that. They just don't have that at home. And sometimes the parents are just trying to do the best they can. Either they are or they aren't, you know, for one reason or another. And so we have to deal with that. I think there's so many things. I think the key is that we listen. Don't push a kid away for how he looks at you or what he says to you when you meet him. Put your hand out there and shake his hand and show him how to shake your hand, looking you in the eyes, and let him not be afraid to tell you about who he is, because we get surprised sometimes where these kids are coming from, and sometimes they're just looking for somebody to listen. And if we don't listen, there's a gang member out there that'll listen to them, and that's a sad thing. So I've always had this philosophy, and even more to this day, in the times we live in, that, man, I want to make that kid from the very first day know that I care about him somehow, and that I want to invest in him, and if he'll give me the chance. And I think that's key, because the world we're in, the society we're in, is teaching them the total opposite values of what we're trying to do. And, you know, I think I shared with you last time, Joe Ehrman, one of the best speakers and the hottest speakers right now, coaches in America. He's really had a big impact on me, what he's doing, trying to reach men to be men, step up and be men in this society. And it's crazy, you know, what stuff we're reading about with the players at all these different levels, and now even high school players. Man, we got to reach these kids somehow. And a lot of times it's just listening.
I encourage everybody to buy, if you haven't read Joe Ehrman's book, I encourage everybody to read that book to get the guy spot on. You know, I read it a couple of times, and the guy really is spot on as far as how to deal with kids and how to deal with situation and everything. You know, and then sometimes you have to get outside your sphere of influence to learn what other people are doing, and that's why I love what I'm doing here with the show right here, because we get a chance to see how other people are handling it. You know, at their particular school, they may be talking about a situation you may have at your school, and it's just a way of opening up the world so that we all can communicate. And the number one thing is, you know, we can sit up here all the time and talk about X's and O's and everything, but that's the easy part, you know, learning how to build a program and learning how to help these kids. That's number one. And if we can ever get back to that, you know, we'll find that we are letting a lot of getting a lot of young guys out there who are ready for this cruel world, you know. And
I think sometimes, Leonard, I think sometimes, you know, coaches, that's a big test for them these days because of the demand. It means sometimes we have to give up the extra minute that we might need to use with our family that night, or give up the – we got to get out of our comfort zone sometimes and take that extra every once in a while when it's needed. And, man, I think that's the difference of making it today as a coach and not making it. You know, these guys are giving up after 4 or 5 because it is demanding. But I think the key is, as long as you can keep your priorities in line and be willing to put your foot down and believe and do what you believe in, that you're not going to live the stress that gets in there every day. And we can have some of these coaches go 20, 30 years like the old days.
Mm-hmm. Do your kids get to the point where they hold each other accountable?
Yeah, I think that's the number one. That's really what turned over in Colton. And I tell you what, a lot of it was the grade thing. Boy, they hammered each other on grades. When they didn't turn in a sheet, you know, because they couldn't come to practice because they didn't turn in their grade sheet. Man, we had kids all over those kids, especially, you know, they get on a starter first, but even they started where they got after the kids that were third, fourth string, you know, because they brought the whole team average down. So, you know, it becomes that thing of ownership, you know, do you take ownership of the program? And I think that's the key, again, for some young coaches is sometimes I was lucky enough to have a lot of success early and got a lot of that out of the way, so I could concentrate on the real deal. but you know what? It's you have to be willing to give up. It's not your team; it's the kids' team. You know, it's all we are there. We're mediators there, and we're there to help them learn how to take that team and roll with it. And I think if we can learn to do that more often, you know, and when we're there when they look to get something, but on Friday, boy, when they tie it up, it's time for them to go to work. And hopefully they can do most of that with very little of our input, just what we need to input, and we can let them learn how to be leaders.
Do you teach a lot about leadership at where you are right now?
I got more and more involved in that. I think I wish I would have done more of that. I was kind of, you know, it's kind of one of those things where when I first heard Joe speak, I said, man, that's what we've been doing for 30-something years. That's kind of our philosophy. But even as a young coach, you know, I could see the times when it was about, man, we got to win this game. We got to win this game. We got to win this game this week. This is a big game this week. You know what? To where I got to become where it was just another game. And every week it was just another game because it was the end product that we were looking for. Man, we learned how to goal set, and we learned how to teach leadership. And, yeah, I really got involved in it. And I guess I grew into that more than – I wish I would have had it, I guess, when I first started. But I was young, just like everybody else. So I'd say young coaches, if you could learn that, leadership is huge. I think today, especially today's kids, everybody wants a gift, you know. And it's not just on the football field. It's in the classroom. It's in society. You know, everything's hand-given. And instead of working for it and getting to own it themselves and work for it. And I think unless we teach them how to do it, man, they ain't got a prayer when they step out from school on their own. So I think teaching leadership skills, you know, the NFHS has captains courses that are free. I would advise every coach to make their captains watch it. I watched it over and over and over. I probably watched it several times now, but it's about giving leadership and teaching them how to be leaders instead of us doing it for them. And because that's what it's about today, man, we can't, and the world's not going to hand it to them, brother. There ain't no free lunch out there. And a lot of kids think there is, and a lot of parents think there is. But there's no free lunch out there. You got to earn it, baby. And I think they need to do that. So, yeah, I think leadership is right up there at the top with what we're doing. I think we owe it to them.
Yeah. How did you keep your kids? Your kids are very successful back in the days and everything. How did you keep your kids so level-headed? Because they played so mature. You know, when I looked at them and everything, I said, boy, they sure mature in what they're doing. How did you keep that going?
You know what? I'm glad to hear you say that. As a coach, we always hope that's happening. But, no, you know what? I think it comes back to that. And Markham was a big thing on that. I think repetition, we rep stuff so much that – that boy, they just knew. I mean, it was like they could do it in their, they said, like almost do it with their eyes closed. I believe they could. But we also ran scenarios for him all the time. We just tried to get the worst scenarios in. We went up and down the field, and I probably practiced too long back in the day. Let's say even up to now. But I remember having a coach one time that said, all right, we were halfway through. He said, oh, man, practice is over. I can't believe it. He came from a big school and a college coach, and he goes, my feet are killing me. And my other coach said to him, what are you talking about? We're just getting ready to go to defense. But, but you know what? We were out there. We were out there. But you know what? We spent – I think we grew up together out there. And all that time we spent together, my kids will tell you, they to this day, one of the things they'll tell you they don't miss, they kind of miss it, but they don't miss it, is the hours and hours and hours we were out on the field. But we had so much fun, and we worked so hard, and we put so much blood on the field that when it did come game time, I don't know how many times, Leonard, you know, when you got to decide to go for two or you got to decide to go for that first down, before I even got out there during the timeout, they'd already decided what they wanted to run, and they believed and they were going to get it. And six pitch, baby, six pitch. Or it was, you know, or it was the play we've been running all night. They knew it was the play that has been getting yardage all night, and they were ready to run it. And it wasn't there was no punt. There was no kick. It was going. Let's go for it, you know. And so I think, yeah, it's a lot of it is repping. A lot of it is the mentality of we can get this done together. You know, they just believed in each other. And I think that was probably the number one thing. Most of my teams, even the teams that didn't win it or didn't win at all, but we had great seasons, great, and we sent a lot of kids on, they believed in each other. And the teams that didn't, I think there were teams that didn't as well. They just didn't do as well. And I think you can – I put a direct correlation to that. And I tell them at the end of the season when we evaluate very, very bluntly, because I believe that they take that on with them. And the ones that were coming back next year, they took it to heart. So, again, be honest with them. And I think the other thing was is prepare them, you know. It's just like when you prepare to go to war. You know, I talked to my son. They train and they train and they train and they train for very few minutes out there on a mission. And but it's got to go like clockwork. And I think that's the biggest thing. I hope that answers it.
Yeah, I mean this is what you believe, and you know, and I just noticed it. I just love seeing them play because they play with such precision, you know. And I said, boy, when you get a team being that precise, you know, and doing what they're doing, and they look like they enjoy every second of it, every step, every inch of it. They were just enjoying themselves out there. And I said,
I tell you what, one of the funniest, and I could say this happened more than once, but one of the funniest to this day things that we share when we talk about the old days in high school football is when they would run after a big play, they would run down the sidelines and they would look at me and go, coach, they didn't even know where the ball was. I would just be rolling on the sidelines, you know, going, I can't believe it. Would you guys get serious? You know, but they had a lot of fun. That's the point. It was a lot of fun together.
Yeah. I remember those guys at the branch and actually at the other school I was before I got here. Once it got in there, those guys were having so much fun out there. It was just like, they had the feeling that, all right, we here is not if, it's by how much.
That was that. I love it.
You know, that was the attitude. And once you get a team there, you know, you are doing right. But there are certain things that has to be done to get them there. And I think we are talking about those things that has to be getting there. You know, as we're talking about the academics and, of course, we touched on behavior. And what about these other things? Did you have a character issue in your with your kids much?
You know what? A lot of it was just believe it in what we believed in. I think it comes back to, again, what we're talking about, all those things. You know, I always told kids, you know, it's one thing to get there one time, but it's another thing to get there on a consistent basis to be one of those teams that everybody's thinking about every year and consistency. And so I think hitting on that, and I think that a lot of that takes care of the character issues. There were just some things that guys knew that weren't acceptable to me, you know, and you know what? I wasn't a prison guard or by any means, you know, there were just things I believe, you know, me, you know, I come from a Christian background and swearing, just a lot of things just weren't acceptable to me, and I didn't make a big issue of it. But kids would mess up, and they would apologize, and it was over, you know. The fact that they had acknowledged it and said, Coach, I meant to say this, and I said, I'd joke, and I'd say, yeah, I thought that's what you said. You know, I'd even have coaches say, oh, sorry, Coach, man. I said, no problem, man. Let's just move on. You know, it's a thing about recognizing people and treating people and your team, same thing. Whatever it is, there's just certain ways that you want to portray yourself, and I think it's important that we get those things into the heads of our kids and coaches and our program, and not only that, our teachers and administrators, because, boy, sometimes I've been in some stands that you're ashamed of your stands for the way they're acting, you know. And you teach the kids, man, we don't want to, you know, we're trying to portray ourselves as a top-notch program that everybody can be, you know, proud of and be admire, you know, and want to be like us. And so that was a hard thing. You know, I can mention a few schools out here that I really like that I always try to use, and I use them as an example for their character, you know, on the field. So, but we also did a lot of things off the field together, and I think that helped with character as well.
You get a lot of calls from across the country about what you do and everything. Do you like talking about the X's and O's, or do you like talking about the process?
Oh, man, you hit it. I tell you what, in the old days, X's and O's, because I was young and goofy. But, yeah, I turned the corner, man. I turned the corner. They're trying to tell me I shouldn't be coaching anymore. Just even with my surgeries, they've gone fairly well, but my body's just – they said I lived two coaching lives, coaching 70-something hard varsity teams, you know. So, but I tell you what I love more than anything to this day. I love mentoring coaches and helping coaches. I love talking on the phone with any. I do get a lot of calls from all over the country, or I speak. I love motivational speaking. If I had the choice of talking about going to a clinic and talking about X's and O's or character and leadership and coaching, mentoring, I would choose in a heartbeat the other one and not X's and O's. I don't mind talking X's and O's. I love football and love the game, but I think our problem today, if we're going to keep our coaches, is helping them learn how to coach and dig deep into their own hearts so they can coach for 30 years instead of at 5 or 6 years say, man, I can't do this anymore because it's driving me crazy and it's hurting my family. And, you know, I've had a lot of my coaches over the years. Coach, the best thing you ever did was tell me, get my family involved and get them on the field with us, get them at practice, get them in the games, bring our wives always sitting the sidelines together. You know, because if you don't have all that together, man, it's like you said, we're losing too many good coaches too early. And so that's, yeah, I love talking more in a heartbeat. It'd be about mentoring. It'd be about the character and leadership and all those things that go with the program building.
Well, I tell you what, since I met you and this family of wings, my energy has been rejuvenated for the last 12, 14 years. And I'm having so much fun right now. I really am. You know, I've been doing this thing for over 40 years, and I'm having more fun today than I did back when I got started, because the emphasis has changed. You know, it's kind of where
–
I'm sorry?
And I said, you're a puppy again, man. We've been revived. That's what I call revival hit you, man. You love it. I agree with you 100%, Larry. I agree with it 100%.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, you don't – now, you're not actively coaching. I think when we talked earlier, you said you are volunteering, helping the coach at the school right now.
Yeah. What I did was I came back to work on a regular basis after being off for surgery. Oh, man, I had seven surgeries in an eight-month period. My grandkids say, man, you're a robot, Grampy. I said, yeah, I am pretty much a robot. But, yeah, I got a lot of metal in me now. But you know what? I was on the headset last year, and I went to practice 3 days a week, 4 days a week. I told them I was going to go 1, and I ended up going 4. And it was a blast. Like you said, it was the best thing I ever did. But I could barely walk when I get home. But it was so much fun. And I was revived. And then being on the headsets Friday night, you know who took over for me was one of my coaches that coached at Colton with me for 11 years and played at Colton. And his brother is Jimmy Smith, who plays for the Baltimore Ravens. And we had Ryan was going to take over for me about 6 years, and I ended up, you know, having to step down after two. So he goes, "You threw me into the fire, so now will you come and help me, mentor me?" But, you know, just helping him with his organizational skills and his play calling skills. And this is a great example of a kid. I call him a kid. He's 40 years old, you know, but he is asking and reaching out to be a better coach and trying to reach into my bag of tricks and just help me teach him how to call the offense in series and see the things that are open and call it at the right time. And so it was a blast, man. That's what I was doing all year, and I loved it. And fixing things, you know, at practice and seeing everything I could see. It was just mentoring all these young coaches. Our whole coaching staff are either players that played for me or coaches that coach for me over the years that have the program now at Grand Terrace. So that's fun when you see that happen.
How did you hold yourself back?
You know what? I did it the wrong way. You know what? It was my body pulled me back and said, I should say the good Lord pulled me back, because he really, what he did was save me. And, you know what? Pulled back the reins and said, you know what? It's time to slow down, sucker. And I laugh now because I really know that for a fact. And I got out there and got a little ambitious last year, but had so much fun. And my kids, you know, Tiffany could tell I was having fun, and my wife. But when it was done at the end of the year, they said, okay, you had fun. Now it's time to back off. And so I'm going to try and take a little softer role this year. But I'm really going to move towards getting back, trying to build my website and try and get out there and do more motivational speaking and maybe helping people, coaches, just mentoring coaches, teaching the offense, teaching them leadership, all those things we talked about, but putting myself out there on a cross-country basis, you know, and do a little bit of that. So I think that's the only thing that's going to settle my heart if I'm not on the field. So if I'm here, I know I'll be on the headsets and I'll be involved somehow. So I just don't want to be in a golf cart, you know, and doing it. I want to be on my feet. So, but that's the plan right now. The plan is to really be trying to mentor and speak and do things and get around. Now that I can move around a little bit, get back out there. Got to get to the conclave, man, and get to the symposium.
Are you planning on coming to either one of them?
I'm trying my best. Last couple of years, I just couldn't do it. Now I really feel like I can. So I'm going to try my best to get to at least one of them, if not both of them. So
okay.
I've got, you know, I also been doing memorials. I've got a memorial this weekend for one of our parents that passed away with cancer and one of my ex-players. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of that, weddings. And I don't know, just having fun, brother. Having fun, you know.
I saw that you got your minister's license. I said, whoa.
Yeah. You know what? I had so many kids ask me to marry them. So I actually got to marry two of my kids, and then I married several of my ex-players. And what a joy. But I've also done several memorials of coaches and friends and done that out there. But you know what? The Lord's been using it, man. The Lord's used it as a tool, and it's absolutely revived me, you know, because they're celebrations. All but I think one of the funerals I've done has just been a glorious celebration of life. And you know me, I'm always looking for the positive, and it seems to be a blessing. You know, I've been blessed that the Lord given me that chance to do that. And even those have just turned into absolute joys with the families after celebrating. So I don't know. It's just, you know, like I said, you keep yourself open and the Lord will take care of the rest. You know, that's all I believe.
These words of yours are going to go down forever. They're going to be cataloged forever into some file, podcast or whatever. And somebody is going to pick these things up 10 years from now. What message would you like to leave if a young coach picks this up and want to listen to it again? What message would you leave for that young coach?
Oh man, you know what? Here's my, and I've always believed.
And take all the time you want.
You hit this. This is my pet peeve right here, Leonard, and I believe this with all my heart. To a young coach who's starting out, and even the older coaches, is to stand firm in what you believe in. Believe in what you do. Be open to learn new things. Always to better yourself. Never be satisfied. But at the same time, the most important thing is to believe in what you do. Believe in the kids you coach. Believe in the coaches you work with. And believe in the people you come in contact with. Because everybody has good qualities. There's a button. Everybody has a button. Our job, if we're going to be coaches, and we really want to truly be coaches, is we have to find, our job is to find the button that turns the robot on inside of them and says, and they turn it around. And that's the thing that keeps you coaching for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, however many God blesses us with, because there's nothing else that's going to make you happy. If you're just thinking about winning and doing it for the winning, you're going to fall short so fast, because this world is real. And there's so many things that you have to deal with as a coach besides winning ball games, but it's about winning in life, and it's about winning in every day. And I believe this saying with all my meetings, I used to teach my players this: when we hit the field every day, in some way, we're going to get better. Every day, in some way, we will get better. So no matter what goes wrong at practice, no matter what goes wrong in school, no matter what goes wrong anywhere, there is something that we can take that makes us better when we leave that field and we go home. And I really, really believe that that's what keeps you going for years and years and years. Love what you're doing, believe in what you're doing, and more than that, believe in what the people you're doing. And last but not least, make a spot for your family to be a part of what you're doing. Never have them watching from afar. Have them right beside you doing the same thing with you. My wife did stats for 38 years. She's been doing stats. When I stopped head coaching, she's not doing stats anymore. She's just enjoying watching. But I tell you what, don't have that family. Coaches don't get divorced. They only get divorced if they don't spend time together. So I think it's important when you make a decision to coach that they realize that they're coaching right alongside of you. And when bring those kids home to meet your wife. Bring those kids home to meet your kids. Let your kids dwell all over the sidelines. Don't ever be embarrassed by what your kids do. Enjoy your time on the football field. It's much better than anything else you could do.
Wow. Harold, with that, I'm going to allow you to go enjoy your family now. Let me tell you, man, it's been
right.
It's been a blast.
I tell you.
I just
Leonard,
love,
I love you, brother.
I love you too, man. It's always been a blast, man, talking with you and sitting down with you. And you know, I don't know what got us together, but I know what got us together. The Cowboy Show.
I love you. Hey, God bless you, brother, and your family, and give that boy a big hug for me, man. I'll never forget you.
I will. And he's already called me twice while we were on there, so I have to call him. To apologize.
Oh, I love it. What a
okay,
joy. Harold. What a joy. All right, brother. Take it easy.
All right. Talk to you later, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, ladies and gentlemen, that is the great Harold Strauss. You can see how fired up I am just to talk to him. I've learned so much from this man, and wow. All right, let's see if we can pivot here to get into next week's show. Next week, we got another great one. Bronson Bradley from Mount Pleasant High School in Tennessee. Again, another single wing guy. And again, a guy who is turning the program around using the wings philosophy. But it's more than that, people. If you think that
just X's and O's is what gets it going. That's only part of it, which is only a small part of it. These guys use, they have their own philosophies on how to turn programs around, and they have their own values and everything, and it works. It just simply works. And all the X's and O's, you know about Harold, you can, like I say, you can go to YouTube and pull up his thing, California Wing, and I left some links to the to his California Wings and the Run the Hammer Facebook page. You can go and get those links and some of the other forums I left the links in, but you can go to YouTube to pick those up and also. And if you got any questions, you know what I mean, hit them up with a question. That's the X's and O's. If all you got out of this was X's and O's, then I think you missed the whole thing of how he built his program and how he became one of the greatest coaches in the state of California. With that, we are going to bid you good night. Boy, I'm so fired up on this one. And you know, it's so much fun doing this. Next week, we're going to try something. If I can get it working, we're going to try to do this thing via Facebook and also doing the live broadcast, see if we can put that together and see if we can put a face-to-face with the guys we're talking with and see if we can use this technology to get the word out about some of the great coaches. Again, next week, Bronson Bradley from Mount Pleasant High School in Tennessee. And again, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and thank you for all your comments. I saw your comments and everything, and I really appreciate you. As we go, have a good week. Have a great time with your kids. Get to know your kids.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful.
Make sure you grab somebody, give them a hug, and tell them you love them. Good night, guys.